Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan. And today we have with us one of our preceptors for Manchester, Dr. Angel Hierley. Angel, did you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Angel Hierley. I'm an infectious diseases pharmacist and antimicrobial stewardship coordinator for Lutheran Hospital. And I'm very happy to be here today.
And we're excited to have Angel. She's a returning champion. She's been with us before, but she's here today to talk to us about some new C. diff guidelines that have come out. So just to kind of kick it off and to start with our first question, who created these guidelines and, you know, when were they released?
Sure. The Infectious Disease Society of America and the Society for Healthcare Epidemiology of America, which I'll just call SHEA, published a 2021 focused update on the management of C. diff infections in adults. This was published this summer in June 2021. This is a focused update to the 2017 C. diff guideline that was previously published.
So these are relatively new. I'd say anything less than a year old, I consider brand new for guidelines. So can you tell us briefly, what do these guidelines tell us?
Sure. This focus update includes three new recommendations for the treatment of C. diff infection in adults. Two of the recommendations modify our previous recommendations for the treatment of initial and treatment of recurrence. The other recommendation is actually a new recommendation for the use of an adjunctive treatment agent for C. diff infection. A multidisciplinary guideline panel focused on the new evidence to answer these three questions that they posed. Question number one was, in patients who have an initial C. diff episode, should fidaxomicin be used rather than vancomycin? Question number two was, in patients with a recurrent episode, same, should fidaxomicin be used rather than vancomycin? And the third question they posed was, in patients with a C. diff episode, should bezlotoxumab be used as a co-intervention along with what is considered standard of care antibiotics rather than just standard of care antibiotics alone? So the new guideline puts emphasis on preventing recurrence, not just the initial cure of C. diff. We know that 15 to 25% of patients who have an initial episode will develop recurrent infection. And after they've had one recurrence, the risk of subsequent recurrences actually even increases further. So more expensive treatments are being recommended in the update, but these are potentially cost-effective when we consider the prevented recurrences.
Yeah, I know that's always a question when we're talking about more expensive treatments, but you have to think beyond just that initial drug cost. What are we preventing? What are we, you know, hospitalization is so expensive. So you can exactly prevent that or decrease that. It makes such a big difference.
Yes. And also quality of life for these patients. But you're exactly right. Cost downstream are definitely being considered in this new update.
So what has changed? How has this changed from previous recommendations?
Yeah, sure. So the big change, fidaxomicin is now suggested treatment rather than vancomycin for both initial and recurrent C. diff infection. So that's the big change, is it's suggested over vancomycin. And these are conditional recommendations, and the certainty evidence was pretty was moderate for the initial episode and low for recurrent episodes. But the additional randomized controlled trial data that they reviewed for this update confirms the lower recurrence rates that we knew existed with fidaxomicin in the original non-inferiority randomized controlled trials. So the benefits of fidaxomicin were seen across the subgroups, and the benefit was seen in both initial and recurrent C. diff. They actually looked at a pooled analysis of four studies that showed that fidaxomicin increased sustained response of C. diff infection 4 weeks after the end of therapy. So basically prevented recurrences from happening as compared to vancomycin. There was no difference seen for mortality, side effects, and initial clinical cure. So the evidence is more robust for patients with an initial episode, but the same was also seen with recurrent C. diff infections as well. Advantages of fidaxomicin include that there's less disruption of the fecal microbiota compared to vancomycin, and it's probably the reason that we're seeing some of these results. It does have similar efficacy to vancomycin for initial cure. It is also non-absorbable, just as vancomycin PO is, and it has a very narrow spectrum. Fidaxomicin cost-effectiveness analysis have found fidaxomicin to be preferred regimen for non-severe C. diff infection and for first recurrences. The cost savings were obviously associated with preventing future episodes of C. diff infection. vancomycin, I will mention the 125 milligram four times a day times 10 days remains listed in an update for the guideline as an acceptable alternative to fidaxomicin. And even metronidazole remains listed as an alternative if a patient has non-severe and vancomycin and fidaxomicin are unavailable.
So when you talk just now about how those are listed as other options, are those other options in, like, if somebody has an allergy to this specific drug, you could go back to the vancomycin or the metronidazole? Or is it more listed as another option if you don't have access to the fidaxomicin? Or kind of why do they continue to be in the, to be listed as an option? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely mostly related to access. So fidaxomicin is quite expensive, and that was taken consideration in when they in the verbiage, even in the guideline. You can read more about that. But because of the cost and access issues with fidaxomicin, they definitely leave vancomycin as an alternative. Same for even metronidazole. So even though vancomycin is quite a bit less than fidaxomicin, metronidazole is almost nothing. So there, and there's still a decent cost associated with vancomycin for some patients. So it's mostly about access. You wouldn't want to use metronidazole if the patient had severe C. diff, but it may be an option for non-severe C. diff if patient has limited access to both vancomycin and fidaxomicin. Because obviously, if they're not able to get a drug or afford whatever has been recommended, no drug is going to be the least helpful. So something is better than nothing, I suppose, is the way you could look at that.
That makes sense. Thanks for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll go on to recurrent C. diff infection and how the new update addresses that. So if patient has recurrent infection, there's actually a new fidaxomicin regimen that is being included in this update, and it's one that a lot of people may not be familiar with. It's part of the EXTEND trial, but that was done in 2018 by Guerri and company, but it evaluated an extended fidaxomicin regimen of 200 milligrams twice a day for 5 days, followed by once daily every other day for days 7 to 25. And that was compared to a fidaxomicin regimen of 200 milligrams twice a day for 10 days. So either way, patients get 20 pills. So the amount of fidaxomicin, the total dose of fidaxomicin over the course is the same. But the EXTEND trial looked at basically extending, kind of tapering that out like we have done in the past with even vancomycin. This trial actually showed one of the lowest rates of recurrence that we've ever seen reported in our C. diff patients. It was only 2% in the group that received the extended regimen compared to 17% who received vancomycin, and this was shown at day 40. So the EXTEND trial also looked at time to the diarrhea resolution. Diarrhea resolved in 34 hours for the patients who received the fidaxomicin versus 22 hours for the patients who received vancomycin. Not statistically significantly different, but there was a bit of a time difference in diarrhea resolution when that was looked at as one of the outcomes. But both standard and extended fidaxomicin regimens are considered options for recurrent C. diff in the new update from the IDSA C. diff guideline. So for recurrent, a pooled analysis of three subgroups did demonstrate that there's an increased sustained response at 30 days after treatment with fidaxomicin compared to vancomycin. But again, there's no difference for initial cure, mortality, and side effects. I will add, though, that the evidence failed to show a benefit of fidaxomicin on sustained response at 90 days when evaluating patients with recurrent infections. The overall certainty of evidence was pretty low, though, for the small sample size and the bias, because one of the trials was unblinded design. So just want to mention that as well. In the new updates, the vancomycin pulse and taper regimens do remain an acceptable alternative for recurrent episodes, and the vancomycin standard regimen followed by rifaximin that we have previously seen in the 2017 guideline also remains an option for second or subsequent recurrences. For treatment of fulminant C. diff infection, that is unchanged in the new guideline, still recommending 500 milligrams of vanco four times a day. And if the patient has an ileus, you can add rectal instillation of vanco and can also consider adding IV flagyl to those patients that have fulminant disease. So fulminant disease, those would be patients that have severe C. diff infection, and also along with that, like hypotension or ileus or toxic megacolon. So the other major change is that bezlotoxumab is now suggested specifically for patients who have recurrent C. diff episodes within the last 6 months, and this is in addition to standard of care antibiotics. In settings where logistics aren't an issue, patients can even receive bezlotoxumab after their first episode if they have other risk factors for recurrence. And risk factors would be considered age greater than 65, a patient who is immunocompromised, they have severe C. diff on presentation. Those patients may benefit from receiving bezlotoxumab even after their first episode of C. diff. Everybody may not be familiar with bezlotoxumab. This is a fairly new agent to the market. It's a monoclonal antibody that targets C. diff toxin B. The patients that are most likely to benefit from bezlotoxumab are the patients that are at highest risk of recurrence, which means especially those who have a history of C. diff. The two studies that are kind of landmark trials for the bezlotoxumab are called Modify 1 and Modify 2. And both showed that bezlotoxumab reduced C. diff recurrence at 12 weeks when compared to placebo, and also reduced hospital readmissions at 30 days. There were no differences seen in mortality, however. The benefits of bezlotoxumab are definitely highest in the patients that have more risk factors. I do want to point out that patients who had only their first episode of C. diff and no risk factors, they did not show benefit from receiving bezlotoxumab. I also want to point out that the data on the use of bezlotoxumab in combination with fidaxomicin is pretty limited. There were less than 5% of the patients in the studies that received this combination. So bezlotoxumab plus vancomycin was definitely more commonly studied than bezlotoxumab plus fidaxomicin. So the patients who receive bezlotoxumab do have to be treated with standard of care antibiotics. It has to be given in addition to an antibiotic that is effective against C. diff. Bezlotoxumab is a one-time 60-minute infusion. It's 10 milligrams per kilogram, and it can be given any time during the course of C. diff treatment. You know, many hospitals require that this be given even after the patient is discharged from the hospital. So they'll receive, you know, maybe 7 days or 5 days, whatever it is, of C. diff treatment in the hospital before they're discharged. And then upon discharge, they'll receive bezlotoxumab. It does have an elimination half-life of 18 days, which translates to pretty decent antibody concentrations up to 3 months after a patient is given a one-time infusion. It is important to know, though, that bezlotoxumab does have a warning for use in patients who have heart failure, and this was based on increased risks of heart failure and mortality in the 12 weeks following infusion for patients who had a history of heart failure. So that's an important thing to point out about bezlotoxumab.
And I'll be honest, I had not really heard about bezlotoxumab until you talked about it today. Are we starting to see a big uptake in the use of this medication, or is it still pretty new and it's still kind of getting people on board with it? Kind of what are you seeing in the landscape right now with that?
So it's actually been out for a few years, maybe 4 years or so, and I would say this uptake is very slow. And it's probably related to cost. It's quite expensive, and it is an IV infusion. The reimbursement is much better on the outpatient world than in the inpatient world, so a lot of times, just being that this is an IV infusion that has to be given, just the setup and the access to it is limited for most patients. So the uptake has definitely been slow. I look for that to probably improve with the new guidelines suggesting that this is beneficial for these high-risk patients. We have not seen an uptick yet in our use of Zimplapa, but I suspect that will change in the future. But our plan is to, just as we have in the past, still reserve it more for an outpatient infusion. So it's an access issue really for most patients.
Yeah, I see that as a concern as well. I really appreciate the detail in this review and the reminder that things change so quickly. I didn't even know this was a drug, I'll be honest. So I need to brush up on some of these things. I really appreciate this conversation. I did want to ask you, just because there are a lot of infection-related guidelines, are there any current guidelines that would conflict with this newly published guideline, and how should we interpret that?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, because in the past, we've always kind of had multiple guiding bodies for the treatment of C. diff infection. So the American College of Gastroenterology, the ACG, also updated the C. diff guidance in 2021. I didn't focus on their specifics for the purposes of this podcast. I did focus more for the Infectious Disease Society of America update because it was more treatment related. But I do want to mention that the ACG, one of the major differences is that they still list fidaxomicin and vancomycin as equals for first-line options for initial severe and non-severe C. diff infections for comparable. They say this, they've rated them pretty equal because of comparable cure rates, higher cross and access challenges that exist with the fidaxomicin, and then a low certainty of evidence in patients who have severe C. diff infection. So there's subtle differences, but they do kind of address those differences in the ACG guideline. It is actually in one of the first lines in the ACG guideline is that it's intended to complement the IDSA guideline. So they do acknowledge the IDSA guideline, and the ACG guideline does also expand on diagnostic issues around diarrhea. It goes into distinguishing C. diff colonization from active infection with our testing that we use. They talk about the use of probiotics more and also the specific evaluation of C. diff infection in patients who have inflammatory bowel disease. And they also talk about best practices around FMT or fecal microbiota transplant.
Well, I mean, this has been great information. Is there anything else that we or our listeners should know, Angel?
Yeah. So the other thing I want to mention, I haven't really talked about fecal FMT, fecal microbiota transplant, but the recommendation for use of FMT has not changed in this IDSA update, but it should be noted that there's been 3 safety alerts that have been published by the FDA since June of 2019, which do outline some side effects among recipients of FMT, especially including the potential for transmission of SARS-CoV-2. So I just want to kind of state it as a reminder that FMT is recommended for patients who have multiple recurrences of C. diff infection who have failed appropriate antibiotic treatments. So implementation of the recommendations in these guidelines is definitely going to be influenced by access. We've kind of already talked about that, just different logistics and some of the costs. But obtaining fidaxomicin and bezlotaxomab outside of the hospital setting can definitely be a challenge, and we all need to keep that in mind. Patient assistance can delay access, which needs to be taken into consideration when we're selecting a treatment plan. Because again, if we're not able to get the patient anything, that is definitely not the course we should be taking. So we definitely have to consider access and costs as we're selecting a treatment plan for our patients. And the other issue is the benefits of fidaxomicin. You know, we all of a sudden have this recommendation for fidaxomicin over vancomycin, but the benefits are likely diminished if we're switching antibiotics during the course of treatment or if the patient is on other concurrent antibiotics. And those are definitely scenarios that we often run into when we're considering what agent to pick. So that definitely needs to be considered as well, because, you know, we may lose some of the benefits that fidaxomicin is associated with if, you know, we're switching antibiotics during the course of treatment. So yeah, I think the bottom line questions definitely still remain regarding the best strategy to reduce recurrence rates in our patients. We need head-to-head trials of different strategies. That is definitely still needed. The best approach to treat and prevent recurrences will probably involve multiple strategies to treat not only the bacteria, but restore the patient's microbiome and even augment their host immune response. But we're definitely making progress in this area, and I was excited to see both IDSA, SHEA, and then the ACG update their guidelines. 2021.
Angel, this has been really great and informative. I feel much better equipped to answer questions and treat patients now. So thank you so much for the time you dedicated to educating our base today.
You are absolutely welcome. Anytime.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.